Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Someone has said that leadership is seeing the consequences of your actions farther into the future than others around you can. By that benchmark, Abraham failed. Sleeping with Hagar was the expedient way to get a promised son, but it was not God's way. And the consequences can still be seen in the tense Middle East. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. In a series on strength for the journey, Pastor Lutzer is in Genesis chapter 16. In today's portion of A Misdirected Faith, we're going to learn about consequences.
We've talked about the immediate consequences, conflict within the home, and the conflict doesn't end, as we shall see in the next message. But then think also of the long-term historical consequences. Ishmael would be born. He would leave the land, and actually a wife would be given to him from Egypt, the Bible says in chapter 21 of Genesis. Think of it this way. Isaac is going to be born. There's Isaac and Jacob, and Jacob is going to have a son whose name is Joseph. Joseph is going to be in a well, and his brothers are going to drag him out of the well, and he is going to be sold to Ishmaelites who are on their way to Egypt. So the whole conflict here is being set up. Furthermore, the Arabs today, largely Muslim, they believe that it is actually Ishmael that should inherit the promises. The argument is this, that Ishmael is the firstborn. So the promise to the land, the promise to the descendants, is not rightfully that of Isaac, but rather it is to Ishmael and to his descendants, and that explains why there will not be any peace in the Middle East ever until Jesus Christ returns. Because you have two conflicting groups of people, each of whom believe that God gave them the land, each of them claiming Abraham as their father, each of them claiming descendants that are like the sands of the sea, innumerable, and each of them insisting that the city of Jerusalem and all of the territory belongs to them. In the next message, I'm going to discuss this in more detail. We're going to see what the Quran has to say about it, because actually it is not explicit on that point. But throughout the centuries, Muslim interpreters have always assumed and have argued that Ishmael is the inheritor of the promises. Now, they are wrong, but the point to be made is that this strife that God predicted, this unsettling conflict between Ishmael and Isaac and their descendants is all set up right here in this text. I find it interesting that in chapter 12, God says to Abraham, I'm going to give you the land, leave your kindred and come into this land. And so he does, and he goes into the land. And then it says there's a famine in the land, and Abraham went down into Egypt. He failed at that point, and we preached a message on it. But while he was there, he evidently met Hagar, and she became a part of his entourage. He had 318 men. I mean, Abraham was a great, great man. And so he had people, probably many from Egypt. Do you think that the time that Abraham went into Egypt and they met Hagar, and then after that, this incident, did Abraham have any possible inkling of the fact that his decision is going to set up a series of dominoes that would still have impact today? There's no way on God's green planet that he could have thought that this decision would have such great impact. And sometimes that's the way our decisions are too. I've made decisions that are very minor, that on the surface appear to have no great consequence, and then you look back and you realize I was going through a door. I opened a door which led to other doors, which led to other doors that became part of a whole sequence, and nobody can predict the long-term impact of a decision. And when you are desperate, you make disastrous decisions. If you have decisions, and some of them are more critical than others, if you're deciding whom you are going to marry or even where you are going to work or what are you going to do with your life, you have to keep moving forward in the will of God. But those plans must constantly be submitted to God, because you might be making a decision that will have consequences that are negative because you failed to trust. So the first lesson is this: impatience leads to regrettable decisions. And we could give many different examples of that. Secondly, God comes to us in our distress and in our misery. God comes to us in our distress and in our misery. Here's Hagar, who basically is a single mother. She is in a home where she is not liked by the wife. And by the way, God does not recognize her to be one of Abraham's wives. The angel says, "Return back to your mistress." So she's to go back as a servant into this home. But here she is in desperation. We could argue whether or not it was a wise decision. Of course, we've argued that Abraham's decision was unwise. But here she is. She could say to herself, "I'm in the midst of a predicament that was not made by me. It was made for me by others. And now I am part of a whole network of events here over which I have no control." When we make bad decisions, does God say to us, "Well, you know, I think that's the end of it. You didn't seek me. You just go ahead and live with the consequences. And misery will track you for the rest of your days." No, God comes and gives hope and gives mercy. And if you want to find some of the most wonderful Christians that you will ever find, wonderful believers, they are of Arabic descent. Now, I have to clarify something that we don't have an opportunity to go into in detail here, and that is this: that it is not true that you can always trace the lineages and the various genealogies with accuracy, because there's been so much intermarrying. But I will tell you, without fear of contradiction, that there are many descendants of Ishmael today who are believers in Jesus Christ, who are our brothers and sisters, who are being blessed by God, more blessed by God than the descendants of Isaac if they reject God's Messiah. So let's keep in mind that in the midst of a bad decision, God always brings grace, God always brings strength, God always does something with whatever it is that we give Him. You're here today and you say, "Pastor Lutzer, I've made a very bad decision that I have to live with." Yes, you have to live with it. But I want you to know that God comes. And He takes those bad decisions and He makes something of them. And He says, out of the consequences, good is going to come. In wrath, He remembers mercy. And in failure, He gives grace. So if you're sitting here today, living with a bad decision, visualize the angel of the Lord coming to you and saying, "I'm going to bless you and I'm going to be with you." This past week, I met a man who had a marvelous conversion story. Because of dyslexia, that's it. He was told by teachers he'd never be able to read. He was 17 years old and unable to read. But he was gloriously converted. And he basically took a fast track, crammed in his education, ended up going to college, almost getting straight A's. His conversion was so miraculous. And what he said was that his parents despised him, rejected him. The schools rejected him. They said, "You'll never amount to anything because you'll never be able to read." And this is what he said to me. He said, "I learned something. People do not have the last word regarding your life. Jesus does." Isn't that great? And you might be a victim today of other people's bad decisions, but people do not have the last word in your life. Jesus does. Jesus does. And God comes to Hagar and says, Hagar, I'm going to bless your descendant anyway. There's a third lesson, and that is this, that Jesus Christ is indeed the one who both sees and hears. He both sees and hears. O Lord, you see me, Bir Lahairoi, the God who sees me. And she's there at the well, and she says, Lord, even though I didn't know that anyone was out here, you are there. He sees people today abandoned in their own deserts. He sees people today who are not only abandoned, but those who feel very empty in their lives. The desert is outside, and the desert is in their life. And he comes, and he brings hope, and he brings healing, and he brings restoration. And he brings grace. He brings grace. I was reminded of the fact that Jesus met someone else at a well. There's a story in the New Testament of Jesus coming to the woman at the well, or he was seated there when she came with her bucket to draw water. What's remarkable about that story is that she is the first person in the Gospel of John to whom Jesus revealed who he was, that he was the Messiah. She had had a bad series of relationships. She had had five husbands and now was living with a sixth husband without the benefit of marriage because marriage had become a charade. And there she is. And Jesus says to her, I have living water to give you. She couldn't look to her husbands for any sense of strength or satisfaction. She didn't have a home in which she could derive some ability. But Jesus said that if you believe on me, from within you there will be rivers of living water springing up into everlasting life. And she became the means by which an entire town, essentially, was converted. They listened to her testimony, and they said that in light of your humility, in light of the fact that you're saying that this man knew all about you, and we know all about you, you sinner, he must be the Messiah. And many more believed because of her testimony. And they went out to see Jesus. Jesus meets us at our extremities. He meets us in our despair. He meets us in our deserts. And he comes to us. My friend, I hope that Jesus Christ is meeting you today wherever you are at. Let me ask you an entirely different question. Are you aware that the FBI uncovered some secret documents written by Muslims as to what their designs are for the United States of America? Well, these are the kinds of things I reveal in my book entitled The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent. I believe that this book will be informative, but it will also encourage you to witness to our Muslim friends. There are stories of conversion. Ask for the book The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent.
Pastor Erwin Lutzer, concluding A Misdirected Faith, the 6th of 10 messages on the life of Abraham in a series called Strength for the Journey. Next time, Abram experiences a growing faith as God changes his name. Plan to join us. The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent is a book by Pastor Lutzer analyzing the rise of Islam. This book will be sent with our thanks when you send a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. For full information, call us toll-free at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Join us for our next Running to Win.